And it's Wednesday, so that means it's time for another HTXT AfriCast. I'm your host, Nick Cowan, and with me on the podcast today is Clinton Matos.
Hello, everybody.
And Brendan Lotz.
Good afternoon.
That should surprise no one, because we're the only people who ever do this anymore. So, it's been quite a few couple of days. You guys might have been aware that a little thing called the US presidential inauguration happened last week, Friday. Who stuck around to watch the whole thing?
I watched parts of it. I didn't watch the whole thing. I just watched parts of it. And then I got a bit too depressed to carry on watching.
I saw some recaps afterwards, but I didn't watch any of it live.
But you said you were going to like check out the memes. So did you see any decent memes, Clinton?
Well, I did, but I did watch some recaps. But I didn't just look at the piss takes people were taking. I didn't just look at that. I saw like some people were comparing the now First Lady's dress to some of the characters from Harry Potter. Some people started making fun of Baron Trump, which is the like 10-year-old son of Donald Trump. And then people threw a hissy. They're like, leave the kid alone. He's literally done nothing. He's just a 10-year-old. Those were like the two big things. Oh, and also the aerial photography of how empty the crowd was compared to Obama. But then some people fired back and said Obama's inaugurated was like an outlier of attendance, so you can't really compare it. But yeah, nothing really big happened, I wouldn't say.
I don't know. I mean, you did get a speech which ended with a which not so much ended with a chant, but where they were chanting America First at one point, which is slightly Orwellian. Although, you know, patriotism being what it is, who am I to criticize? My big sort of reaction to the whole thing was the following day when Donald Trump visited the CIA and he did his first pronouncement there. He said something along the lines of, you guys haven't been getting any support. Now you're going to get all the support. You're going to get so much support.
It's going to be fantastic.
So he said, you're actually going to say, Mr. President, we don't need this much support, but you're all going to get it anyway. And I realized, you know what the Americans have elected? Have you ever had a friend who, when they get drunk, starts to tell you how they'd run the country?
Yes.
That's what they've elected. It's like, let me tell you something, Brew. If I was president, there'd be a war. It'd be the best war you've ever seen. And I'll kick out these people and everything would be fine. That's basically who they've elected. It's amazing. It's the drunk guy at the bar president.
I kind of felt really sorry for his wife and now First Lady Melania Trump. Like, she didn't look like she wanted to be there at all. Like, I saw some memes where she's like, she's smart. Trump is looking at her and she's smiling. And you can see that she's got this like look of pride. And the minute he turns around, she's just got this, like, sourpuss face. Like, why am I here? Why? Why did you do this to me? Like, I don't think she was prepared to be First Lady at any point in her life.
Yeah, well,
I saw one. This image was going around for a while before the inauguration. But it's like her pulling a face. And it says, my face when all I wanted to do was marry a rich old guy. And now I'm the First Lady of the United States.
You see, this is the sort of thing, you know, I mean, like, you said you were going to make a collection of memes. I want you to hunt down the best memes you've seen. I mean, let's face it, that's how political commentary is going these days. Political campaigning just seems to revolve around who can get the most attention for the most outrageous tweet. So maybe political coverage shouldn't be, like, you know, lengthy analysis in the Daily Maverick or, you know, experts being brought onto panel shows. Maybe it should just be us sitting with a folder of memes going, yeah, this is what happened.
Michelle Obama was also another person that didn't seem too impressed with the whole situation. Like, you could see, to me it looked like she was holding back, like, the snidest of comments directed at Donald Trump. But she was ever graceful throughout the whole affair.
Well, I tell you, the one thing that did come out of out of the whole thing. Well, I mean, did you guys see the you obviously didn't see the press secretary the following day.
Oh, gosh.
I think his name's Spicer. Is it Sean Spicer?
I think it is Sean Spicer, yeah.
Yeah, the guy in the ill-fitting suit and the very angry face.
Yes, him.
Yeah, and he basically came out and admonished the press for false tweeting and inaccurate reporting and basically being mean to his boss. And you sit there going, the irony of this situation is so incredible right now. It's like the best incredible. It's like the best irony. There's all the irony here. Like, no one has as much irony here. It's going to be great. No, but seriously, it's like you sit there going, Sean, have you checked out your boss's Twitter feed during the election? You know, whether you are for Trump or against Trump, you know, Sean Spicer admonishing the press for inaccurate tweeting and being mean is the height of irony.
Yeah.
And my favorite addition to the world lexicon, Donald Trump's personal spokesperson, who said that all Spicer was doing was presenting alternative facts.
Yes, I love that phrase.
Yeah.
I'm gonna use it every day now.
No. Have you guys seen Sean Spicer's 5-year war with Dippin' Dots?
What?
Okay, so this makes me laugh. Okay, so you know Dippin' Dots, yeah. The ice cream of the future.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So some internet detectives went through Sean Spicer's Twitter account, and in 2010 he tweeted out, "Dippin' Dots is not the ice cream of the future." So you think, okay, that's strange. Maybe he had a strange run-in with Dippin' Dots. The next year, right, so that was in 2010, 2011, and he says, I think I've said this before, but Dippin' Dots are not the ice cream of the future. So that's not all, right? A few months later, that was in September. This is in November of the same year. Ice cream of the past, Dippin' Dots files for bankruptcy. And it's a link to a Wall Street Journal story about Dippin' Dots. That's not over, right? So that was the 4th of November 2011. He comes back 7th September 2015. If Dippin' Dots was truly the ice cream of the... They would have not have run out of vanilla. Man.
Wow. He really had a grudge against ice cream.
Are you sure that this isn't just some parody account?
No, Sean Spicer, here we go, what's it called? His verified Twitter account tweeting out these things.
Because this is the second weird thing I've heard about this guy. Do you know that he's a massive cosplay fan?
What?
Yeah. Kotaku essentially found his official Twitter account, and there he is at a cosplay convention, spotted at Katsucon at Timo DC, best anime convention at the Gaylord National Harbor. And he's got a picture of this proud parent standing next to someone who's dressed up as Gundam.
And is that him?
I hope so.
Okay, so here's the story from Kotaku. I'm just waiting for it to load. There's another story by Bleeding Cool News that he could save comics. But anyway, there's some tweets about him. Some people, he took a picture of some people standing next to a cosplay of a Gundam mech.
Yeah.
Man, this guy is layered. This guy is...
He's like a cake. The Black Forest cake of Trump's administration.
A cake in an ill-fitting suit. This is amazing. Man,
okay, and now, okay, yesterday, there was an open letter to Sean Spicer from the Dippin' Dot CEO, Scott Fisher. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it starts with, "Dear Sean, we understand that ice cream is a serious matter."
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. One of the,
That's what I love about the internet, right? You get angry about ice cream 5 years ago, and then somebody goes and digs it out. And they're like, "Why were you? What problem do you have with ice cream, Sean?" What is this?
Okay, yeah? Let me tell you something. I want everyone to do some research on Sean Spicer, because we might actually be able to do an entire podcast on this guy next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is incredible. This is absolutely incredible.
Does he play like World of Warcraft? Has anybody discovered that?
I had no idea, but now I'm scared to go in there because see, the thing was that after I watched the inauguration and what happened the weekend, I just actually went, you know what? To hell with this world. This world is scaring the hell out of me. So I reinstalled the Elder Scrolls Skyrim on the PS4, and I also installed The Witcher 3. And I think between those two games, they might, if I rinse them, eat up the next 3 months. And then after that, I'll do something else. Maybe there'll be a new open world out there that I can use to escape. But now that Sean Spicer might be lurking around every corner in Azeroth, I'm not sure. I think I'll just have to stick to single-player RPGs. Damn you, Sean Spicer!
So one of my favorite things that came out of the Donald Trump inauguration since he's been inaugurated is...
Are you kidding me? The Dippin' Dots stories is not the favorite thing that's come out of this?
Well, now it is. Sorry. Before we started recording, I mean, to say, the Dippin' Dots thing is incredible. I didn't think that somebody could have such an issue with ice cream. But Shia LaBeouf's little campaign interests me a lot, that he will not divide us thing, where he wants to protest Donald Trump for the next 4 years. And I don't know about you, but I don't think I have the strength of will to protest somebody for 4 years. Like, that's a long time.
Yeah, but when you think about it, he's not actually protesting. It's actually a very clever protest. It's kind of like setting the VCR to record a program while you're out.
Yeah,
it's essentially he's made a space for people to protest. I don't think he's going to be there every day. But
you say that, but we are talking about Shia LaBeouf here.
I think he'll just send someone with a brown paper bag over his head if he can't make it. but yeah, he's created a space for people to protest if they want to, and you think to yourself, well, you know, that's really cool, you know. And it's something that I'm sure can be looked at quite positively by both the left and the right in America. Yeah. Because, you know, if there's one thing that monument and the people who have pitched up there have proven, is that whatever else you say about Donald Trump, he has divided a lot of people in that country. And maybe they do need some reconciliation out there. I mean, obviously, there are certain people who are never going to see eye to eye and have no interest in doing so. But, you know... It's not a politically partisan thing that he's done. He's just created a space. You could be a Republican who's fallen out with all of your Democrat friends and they're giving you a hard time, and you could pitch up there going, he will not divide us. You know?
Fair enough. I didn't actually think about it like that.
Yeah. It's not just, I mean, like, you know, you look at Shia LaBeouf screaming in the ear, rather deservedly, of some guy who comes up and basically uses racist shorthand. You know, and you think to yourself, yeah, this is a completely left-wing venture. But the point is, it doesn't have to be. It can be something quite unifying over the next few years. And who would have thought? Shia LaBeouf. Everybody's like, you know, people have been treating this guy like a punchman for so long, not just because of the awful movies he's in, but also the things he does in public.
Yeah.
And he's actually created something that, you know, may be worthwhile and useful, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, that doesn't make me want to watch Disturbia or any of the Transformers films anymore. But hey,
okay, but wait, right? You say he's driving people apart, right? Wasn't the Women's March because of Trump? Wasn't that a massive show of American togetherness that he indirectly caused?
Who?
I'm not saying... driving people apart and being divisive are not necessarily the same thing, Clint. But let's face it, like, America's two countries now more than it ever has been, except perhaps with the exception of the Civil War.
Forget that.
It's quite a long time ago, but,
yeah.
You know, he is a divisive figure. Have you met someone in your life at the moment who has said, Donald Trump, yeah, I can take him or leave him?
No.
Everyone's got an opinion on the guy, you know? There's hardly anyone on the fence about him.
Fair enough. I mean, the next 4 years are going to be interesting for sure. Whatever does happen, good or bad.
Yeah. There's Madonna the other day saying she wanted to blow up the White House.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty shocking.
Singing one of her songs. and then singing one of her songs.
I want to blow up the White House and then sing like a virgin. What? But yeah, it'll be...
Sorry.
I'm very interested to see how the next 4 years pan out. Do we think that he's going to serve the full four terms? Do we think that he's going to get a second term?
No idea. He does.
Man, 8 years.
You never know. You never know. But, you know, in the last few days, what's he done? He's he started to repeal Obamacare.
Yeah.
He's erased every single trace of climate change from White House records. He's signed. I think he started in on abortion rights as well.
Yep.
And a pipeline he's building as well. No mention of the wall yet, but he did say everyone's going to get free health care. Hey, it's going to be a thing.
Yeah, definitely going to be a thing.
So something yeah. he's done that a lot of people actually like is that he's pulled America out of the TPP, the Trans-Pacific
Partnership
Trade Deal. A lot of people said that was a good move, and when that was announced, they were really scared of it. So,
well like I said, I'm prepared to give, if not him, then certainly his administration, the benefit of the doubt for at least the next 6 months. I mean, how much damage can he do in 6 months? Let's revisit that.
It's 6 months' time. We'll listen to this podcast again.
Anyway, let's move on from that because, maybe take things to a lighter level.
Yeah.
Clinton, you have a game in your crosshairs. Can you tell us a bit about it?
So this flipping game, so mysterious. It's called The Pedestrian. Now, I've been wanting to write about this since about the middle of 2016 when I came across it on Imgur, which is an image sharing site. Now, all that it was a series of GIFs showing off this game. And now, what it is it's something you need to see, so I'll put a link under this so you can see it with your own eyes. But it's a puzzle platforming game in which you need to get through the world using public road signs. Now, again, this is something you need to see, because when I say public road signs, you think, how the hell is that going to be a game? But it is. You need to put together these road signs, and you have a little stick man who goes through it. And I wanted to tell people about this, but all I had was images, and the developer, who's called Skookum Arts, very strange name, all they had was a Twitter account. And I couldn't really link to just a Twitter account and be like, hey, here's a game. But in the past week, they now have a Kickstarter campaign. They want to launch the game in the middle of 2017, and they're only looking for $21,000, which is nothing. It's, how much is that in rand? It's 285,000. Yeah, it's not a lot of money to make a game. So I assume that the game is mostly finished, and they're just doing this maybe for some good PR, maybe to tell people about it. But now they have a Kickstarter. We can go see all this cool stuff, and they have a playable demo. It's about 300 megs, so it's not a small demo, and you can get it off itch.io, which is a game sharing site. And it looks really good. You can pick up the game cheap. It's going for only a few dollars. How many dollars? The cheapest you can get it is $15, which is 203 rand.
Oh, wow. That's cheap.
Yeah, it's just something. I need to give you the link. I need you to go see this. It really looks interesting. The last time I was so interested in a puzzle platformer was a locally made game called Semblance. And you cannot make me be bothered with puzzle platformers, but this one looks great. You've seen it, hey, Nick?
Yeah, it looks a little bit. When I saw it, it reminded me of a very old game called Load Runner, at least in a sort of visual style.
Load Runner.
But yeah, like I said, I was just really, really intrigued by the premise of it. It sounded like you were just going to be leaping through street signs, which is pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's a really interesting mechanic, I think, or a setting for a game rather, not mechanic. Puzzle platformers onto themselves. But I think it's just a really cool idea. Like, all these things that we see every day, and you have to navigate road signs to complete. It just looks like a lot of fun.
And also, it looks kind of realistic. Like, if you're just focusing on the sides, the background blurs a bit, and you're like, holy shit, this looks a lot like real life. This would be the perfect VR game. It would be so good in VR. I hope they do that. Their stretch goals, what are their stretch goals? So they only have one stretch goal, which is $4,000 over, and they'll add a cat to the game in some capacity. And it looks like they have two or three more stretch goals, which haven't been unveiled. I hope one of them is VR. This would be amazing. If you could stand like in the middle of a street, and on all four sides of you, there were these street signs, and you had to hop them between. Man, this looks really good. I'm excited for this. Hope it's good. If you want to get in early, you can go play the demo, which is completely free. There's still lots of time to back this. From the time this goes live on Wednesday, there'll be 22 days left. And they're more than 50% funded, so they'll almost certainly be funded. And something strange that they're doing, on Kickstarter, you can do... You can have flexible funding or whatever it's called, where if you don't meet your target, you still get whatever money was raised. They're doing all or nothing, which means if they don't get to $21,000, they lose. Well, they don't lose all that money, but none of the people who contributed have their cards charged and they get no money. I wonder why they did it all or nothing. That's a bit of a gamble.
I think it's like an assurance to the backers to say to them, listen, we're not just trying to take your money and run. Like that movie that you wrote about last year.
But they made the movie. That was different. I'm sure this is just kind of like a PR boost, because 21,000 is not enough to make a game. It's really not.
Yeah.
Especially like something that looks this good. And because the release date is so soon, I'm sure they had most of it done. And they maybe needed a cash injection. They maybe needed some investors or something.
Yeah, but service base or whatever it might be.
Yeah. Another cool thing is that every backer from $5 onwards gets their name on the end title sequence in the credits. That's what that's called. $5 or more, you get your name in there. And there are even backer tiers where you can get an actual met sign that comes from the game, which I thought's nice. It's a nice physical thing you can have in your hands. Doesn't ship to South Africa, though. US only. So I'm just mentioning it for the sake of mentioning it.
Have family in the US.
We'll use Aramax or something like that. So, I'm not going to talk about it much longer because, again, something you need to see. And I probably sound insane without you seeing some video GIFs. Very strange game that I found in a very roundabout way, but now it has some more publicity, and I'm happy to be the signal booster for people to see it.
That's going to be your new handle. Signal booster.
I sound like a G.I. Joe character.
Signal booster most of his time on Reddit.
Yeah. I just have a giant backpack with an aerial. So that's a pedestrian. Definitely give it a try. You literally will lose nothing downloading the demo, except internet cap if you have a cap connection. So I suggest doing that.
Okay. So you're into this particular game. And Brendan, you've been recently playing a game that you haven't played before.
Yeah.
Which you enjoyed so much, you're actually going to start a column on it.
Yes, indeed. For anybody that doesn't know, I've actually been going to D20 every weekend for the last 2 weeks to play Dungeons & Dragons. And I'm going back again this weekend to play again. And it has hooked me. Hook, line, and sinker. Like, I never thought I would be into a tabletop RPG, but this game is just so much fun. So, if anybody has never heard of Dungeons & Dragons, which rock have you been hiding under?
What are you doing listening to this podcast?
Yeah. Because Dungeons & Dragons has been around since 1974, and it's been changed and shaped throughout that time into the massive game that it is today. So I am still very much a noob when it comes to this sort of things, but so I'm going to do my best to explain how it works. So there is a group of adventurers. I'm not sure how many people are supposed to be in a group, but in our little team our party, we have about 6 to 7 people at any given time. And then the game is controlled by a dungeon master, which I have aspirations of being simply because I want to be called a dungeon master. Like, it's how cool is that title? Right? So, yeah, so the dungeon master kind of controls the game, essentially. So he would tell you how the adventure plays out, where you are, what sort of creatures you're fighting, and then the dungeon master also controls the creatures that you fight and NPCs that you meet along the way. And what's really awesome about it is that, like, I've never played Dungeons and Dragons, but I've played a lot of, like, role-playing games like Skyrim and Fallout and many other PC and video games in my life, and a lot of that knowledge is kind of transferable. So you get XP in Dungeons and Dragons, and you get critical hits and high rolls and things like that. And, like, there are some things that really confuse me. Like, when for the first time somebody said to me, "You need to roll 2d20," I was like, "What? What is a 2d20?" And I realized it's 2 20-sided die. And like, but the guys have been really, really welcoming. Like, they've explained everything and how you're supposed to do certain things. And I think that's been the key to enjoying it, is having people that are patient enough to explain the mechanics to you. Like, when you should be doing things, when you should not be doing things. And it's just really awesome to kind of escape from reality, as it were, for a few minutes and pretend to be somebody else. And I think, like, video games do that to a certain extent. But I haven't in recent memory been able to sit down and play a video game for 6 hours at a time. Now, however, I mean, I'm sitting playing Dungeons and Dragons from 10 to 4 every Saturday without wanting to take a break, ever.
Wow. And what's happening in your adventure?
Okay, so the first adventure, currently we are looking for a... Okay, so let me set the scene, because I need to explain it in depth. So there is a...
You need to tell us your class, Brendan.
Oh, okay, I'm a level 6 dragonborn barbarian that wields a great axe. And I have a set of armor that we call the kamikaze armor, because I can launch a firebolt on myself and not get damaged, which is really awesome. So you can do damage in an AoE and wipe out some minions. So anyway, so the adventure that we're currently on is there are a group of wizards that are trying to raise I can't remember the exact name, but like the king of the dragons or the queen of the dragons. And to do that, they need five dragon masks of different colors. And we're currently trying to track down the white dragon mask to try and stop these wizards from raising the dragon, the king or queen of the dragons, and destroying, decimating everything on Earth. So that's what we're currently trying to do. And throughout the... like, I'm sure you guys have played Skyrim. Like, on your way to an adventure, you get stopped by, like, a dragon that you need to kill, or some trolls, or some giants that you need to dispose of to get to where you're going. And that for me is, like, one of the coolest parts, is because you're actually playing that. It's not like, oh, here's an enemy that I need to slay. Oh, here's something where I need to start taking tactics and think about healing and think about this and think about that. And are we going to be able to rest after this, or do we need to go? Like, it gives you a lot to think about. And it's, for me, it's a lot more engaging than some video games are even. And it's just so much fun sitting there with people and drinking coffee and rolling dice and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I'm writing a column about how to kind of get into this world, because it is quite daunting, or it seems quite daunting at first, when you are now faced with what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to roll here? Am I supposed to attack? Should I run away? Should I do this? Should I do that? And, like, you've got to play as your character. You've got to take on their attributes. So, like, for instance, I have really low intelligence. So I could have a really good idea, but I can't say it, because that's not something my character would do. My character is more smash now, ask questions later. So, yeah, and we have, for instance, in our party, we have a witch doctor that loves treasure. So whenever he hears that there's treasure somewhere, he runs straight into a room, because that's what his character would do. And then we all have to run in after him and try and save him, a la Leroy Jenkins style. So it's really, really interesting how everybody's characters work with each other, and how you have to sit and discuss things. And it's just really, really awesome. And I would highly recommend. If you've been saying, oh, I really want to try Dungeons & Dragons, just take that dive and get into it, because it is so, so much fun. A lot of people also are really daunted by the use of pen and paper. But I use an app on my smartphone called Squire, which does all the rolling for you, so you don't even need dice. When you want to attack, there's a button for attack. So it makes everything a lot simpler and a lot more condensed, so that you can see what you're doing and get a better grasp on what it is that you're doing, rather than poring over miles and miles and pages of lore and mechanics and that sort of stuff. So yeah, Dungeons & Dragons is my new favorite game at the moment.
Wow. So that's the end of your weekend.
Yeah.
I need to play this game. I've always wanted to play it, but I've never had people who knew how, and you kind of need...
Well, you
need a guide.
Well, you do know you can head on down to D20 and try it out.
No, I know. It's just, since Brendan told us about it the past 3 weeks, I've just could not go. People have been like, oh, let's go do stuff, and then they cancelled on me, the bastards. So, yeah, I will go at some point. I just need to make time. It sounds so cool. I've always wanted to play D&D.
As an old veteran of this sort of thing, I can tell you it is very cool, but your social life will suffer.
It's fine.
Kind of like starring in your own HBO serial every week.
That's fine. I don't have a social life anyway. It all works out.
And on that rather unsociable note, I think that we can draw a line under this particular podcast. Thank you very much, Brendan.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Clinton.
I wasn't doing anything with my time anyway.
Have a good week, guys. We'll see you next week. Bye.
See you guys. Bye. Bye.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.